This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hscc.org.
Good morning. Rin Tom, would you switch off that heater that's next to you there? Thank you. Recently, I've been noticing that in spite of the teaching that we are, all of us, fundamentally one life, it doesn't exactly look that way. And I noticed that when I'm out and about, riding the bus and whatnot, it really does look like there's lots of different people. And of course, this is a habit, perception, a habit of perception that we have and have had for a very long time. But I also noticed that it's possible, not challenge that habit exactly, but it's possible to let the, what we sometimes call the body of truth, that is the Dharmakaya, announce its presence somehow. And I noticed that it's maybe not easiest, but maybe most accessible when you encounter some stranger and there's a moment of face-to-face witness. And it's right before the social habits assert themselves and we kind of break apart from one another. So I'm sure you noticed you're walking down the street and there's somebody coming the other way. And very often what happens is your eyes will be down, and then as you draw abreast of one another, there'll be just a moment where your eyes connect, and then you look away again, and continue on your way. And in this neighborhood, sometimes there's something beyond that. Someone will turn around, a person will turn around, and next thing you know, there's a new romance blossoming. But apart from those instances, there is there's a moment where that habit of separation weakens or even disappears. And when you and this other person behold each other, as Dharmakaya Buddha, which means there's no particular mental assessment going on. This is like, I think this is what Dogen, our Japanese 13th century ancestor, had in mind when he said, it's like meeting someone and not noticing what he looks like or what she looks like. That's kind of rare. I mean, usually you meet someone, there's some assessment going on. Cute, not cute. Male, female. Rich, poor. Dangerous, not dangerous, etc. All of that stuff that goes on. But there's actually access to a moment where none of that is happening. And it's so brief that we tend to just kind of skip over it. Because it's also a little scary. It's like suddenly you're not wearing any clothes. This other person is looking at you and they may be feeling the same thing. So that moment where the glances cross is very brief. Because generally, we don't want to be that naked, at least not for very long. And sometimes we'll substitute that kind of nakedness for a more literal nakedness having to do with clothing. And sometimes that's a substitute. And this is just one instance of how the power of practice is accessible to us all the time. Of course, it's made more difficult if we don't have some pre-established criteria of feeling, you know, emotional response or something that we can check with and say, yeah, that's it, that's it's happening. Because in these moments of meeting, there isn't any of that. Zen story collection known as the Blue Cliff Record, the commentator Yuan Lu often says, uses this expression, here lightning is too slow. That's how fast it is. So I'm just recommending that one of the many, many, many contemplations we can do is contemplating in the midst of much activity and many people and much movement, contemplating the Dharmakaya of stillness. So you can stand on a street corner and simply not do anything, just observe. And notice all of the tendencies to categorize and rely on established patterns. And in the midst of those, your own sense of this vast, incontrovertible truth is—it's right there. As long as you don't reach for it, and since reaching is what sentient beings are all about, that's, you know, it's a little tough. So we try to acquaint ourselves with the body-mind of no reaching by sitting still with one another. As we say very often, of course, this is, it's not that there's no transformation. it's not that practicing the Buddha way does not effect transformation. But as another ancestor said, it can't be defiled. In other words, it can't be subsumed into our daily list of accomplishments. So this Dharmakaya Buddha, as you know, one way the story is told is that Buddha has three bodies: Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, and Nirmanakaya in Sanskrit. Dharmakaya, as I was saying, is the body of truth. Sambhogakaya is like the body, sometimes you might say the body of awakening or the body of enjoyment. And Nirmanakaya is the body of activity and manifestation. And these are all, of course, simultaneously present. So the Dharmakaya has no labels. Nothing will stick to it. And that, of course, makes it seem very elusive, because you can't label it with anything. The Sambhogakaya, the body of enjoyment or awakening, that too crops up every day. You know, you may not recognize it as such. But sometimes some sense in the body of ungraspable possibilities way beyond anything our intellect can assess. It's like a little quiet thrill in the body. Very, very subtle. You could call that Sambhogakaya if you like. But again, you won't be able to hang on to it. And then Nirmanakaya is activity that springs from the life of these other two bodies. And that can be anything from feeding the cat to sitting with a sick friend, mourning the loss of a loved one. Deploring what's depicted in the news. And when we deplore what's depicted in the news, it's good if that's in the context of our Bodhisattva vow to save all beings. And because of these three bodies, because of their ineffable activity, that vow is a real power. So just now, the Dharmakaya Buddha is is immensely powerful. And its power manifests in the way that it completely escapes our attempts to possess or control. When we meet someone on the street, a perfect stranger, our attempt to lasso that person in various ways is defeated by the power of Buddha's body of truth. Some of you may be thinking, you know, well now wait a minute, what does this body of truth feel like or look like? Or, how do I know when it's, you know, there? And I think, you know, we can actually trust the teaching enough that we can set aside all of that hemming and hawing. So just sitting here together, Buddha's truth body is fully present and completely, again, beyond our grasp. And sometime you might hear that teaching and there's some soft feeling in your body. This is Sambhogakaya. Some say that No, Sambhogakaya, that's only when you, have an enlightenment experience. But I think that's more of our human bullshit, frankly. We always try to find some way to put things in a package that's familiar. So we hear about the three bodies of Buddha, but then we try to attach all these conditions. But these bodies are condition free. So when you walk down the street, you might just, you know, check out this practice of encountering the other. And in that moment of unbearable nakedness, just let that be. And if in that moment the other party gets the wrong idea, well, you can say, Give them a hearty hello and continue on your way. Personally, that doesn't happen to me very much, but I'm sure it happens to some folks. I don't mean to say that it's necessarily an easy thing to manage, because personally I'm very, actually quite shy, so I tend to kind of avoid strangers a little bit. So often I notice when I'm walking down the street, I'm often the first one to look away. But I'm reminded of the occasion when I met Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, who, of course, he was really the founder of this temple before we Zen folks got a hold of it. And he was coming to give a talk at somebody's house in the Palo Alto Hills somewhere. And he was, of course, hours late, as he usually was. And I was just wandering around in the front room there, and this guy comes in. And there was this moment of utter naked exposure. And I immediately turned away. And the person was dressed in this very sort of blue jeans and Guatemalan shirt, aviator glasses. And I thought, who is this guy who's having a naked moment with me? Go away, where you are. And of course, it was Trungpa Rinpoche. And he was quite ready to meet me in that naked moment. And I wasn't. So that lesson stayed with me. It was many years ago. And right in that moment, the three bodies of Buddha were alive. But that was too much for me, I thought. So I sidestepped the moment. But you can try this practice anytime. All it consists of is really, you know, as we say, just be yourself in the encounter with other beings. Just be yourself and trust that Buddha's body of truth is unassailably present. Your own body of enjoyment can vibrate with that truth, and maybe some gesture will emerge. Maybe give some spare change, or hello, how are you? Do you need directions? Or no words, just meeting and passing. I'm sure you all have other things to do today. I was just sitting here thinking, well, I could sit here forever. I don't think that would be very nice. Of course, I couldn't really. But that sense of timeless silence is so real. That's the Sambhogakaya, the enjoyment body. Little voice singing of Dharmakaya Buddha. This little gadget here. Tells me I've been speaking for 27 minutes already. So, I don't know, maybe some of you are completely, or think you're completely befuddled by what I've been talking about. And if so, you're welcome to say so. And I don't know if there's anything I can do about it, but oh, yes.
I just was wondering if there is the way you're describing these three, my experience with working with Zen comes up, and I'm kind of interested that I could actually use these concepts to help define something that I'm experiencing, which is that when it comes to, I've always felt that when it came to working with the precepts, or that coming to that by using them as ways to tools to work with or to train me never really worked. Any time that I felt like I needed to make myself feel a certain way or do something, yeah, never felt substantial or real. Mm-hmm. Whereas sitting Zazen, the precept, I could see how the precepts naturally flowed from the practice of Zazen, as opposed to forcing myself to do it. By sitting Zazen, this is what the precepts are, what flows.
Yeah.
Out of that.
Yeah.
So I see that as the sitting Zazen and whatever flows out of that is the Nirmana Kaya. Is that the same thing, or is that something?
You could say that. As long as, you know, we don't squeeze that too hard. You could, for instance, take that as a kind of a theory and sort of work with it a little bit and see, is there a sense of something workable and genuine there? And you may decide, nah, not really. Or you may decide, no, it's okay. But the issue always is, we do try to settle on a tried and true set of labels and keep them.
Yeah, I think it's more less just not feeling like I'm just doing it different than everyone uh-huh. else, and so I think, oh, this actually may be what this may be. Yeah.
Well, of course, Dogen said, when sitting, what precept is not kept? So I think, yes.
I think I didn't have the language around it or sort of the teachings around it, but I definitely find myself, because I ride maybe to and from downtown, trying to sort of do that, experiment a little bit with people, and it's tough.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to get past sort of the packaging, even when I do have those momentary, like, connection, you know, like, visually with the clients, I turn away pretty quickly, too, if they don't. And, and then I start to feel sort of guilty, like, why am I... What am I trying to get out of that, or what am I trying to do? I remember that, you know, for quite a while I used to see someone on the trains that I always felt like I wanted to talk to, and that it was like I felt like there was some sort of connection, and I kept thinking, well, why do I think that, and what am I trying to get out of it, and things like that. And so it kind of, it certainly is not an easy exercise. And the one person I used to always see on the trains that I always wanted to talk to is the guy right there. So, I knew he'd come here, and I wanted to talk to him more because, you know, I knew he shared a practice interest. And I used to see him on the morning transit years ago. But it's tough. It's really tough.
Yeah, well, as I say, it's a little scary to be that naked.
Yeah.
And, you know, most folks would, what should I say, if they knew what that was about, they'd be up for it. But because most of us, we don't necessarily know what it's about, that instant of intense intimacy is just like, well, that's enough of that. So we tend to put it aside. And... someone who's walking down the street and is just like totally open and accepting. Sometimes people will give that person a wide berth because it's just it's a little scary.
I think in a certain, sometimes those things occur with people that you think, well, I don't want that to occur with that person.
I've given
change to a gentleman, and I get, when I give money to the homeless, it's kind of, I don't know, that's some sort of, when there's a certain feeling, that's when I do it, because I can't do it every day, all the time, the same people I see in my same path every day, all the time. And I don't remember, he had like a blanket that my mother had when I was growing up, like the same mass-produced blanket, so I felt like, oh, I needed to. And, and there was this sort of intense eye contact, and she was saying some kind of strange things about being able to see who I really was, and apparently I had long braids and some things that were, you know, a little interesting like that. But there was this really intense moment when I was walking away where he said, I love you, and I just kind of freaked me out. And it was a few days of, like, what's that about?
Well, I'm sure I mentioned before, somebody who had been at Tassajara during the winter for winter training came back to San Francisco and was complaining to Suzuki Roshi that she found it was really hard to be on the bus with what she felt like was all this suffering. She was like, really, really, really hard. So that all she told him all she could do was sort of have these sort of like a horse wears, these blinders. And he kind of agreed with her and said, that's kind of the price we pay for how we live in the city. That's just how it is. So sometimes we have to put our hood up a little bit. Take baby steps. And yet still our practice will more and more give us confidence in these the Buddha's three bodies as something not apart from us at all. The three bodies become a story about how things actually work in the world of truth. And as bodhisattvas, our vow is, well, that's where we want to live. That's where we intend to live, in that world. Of course, that's the only world there is, but sometimes it's tempting to think otherwise.
Sometimes when I'm out and about, I will run into a person like that and walk along. There'll be this very brief eye contact, and sometimes the people will look away suddenly, as if what they've done is rude or something.
Right.
It's as if they didn't want to see my eyes.
Right.
And if just for the moment, I will smile, nod, and a lot of it is from the fact that I enjoy it. Let's be realistic. Another one is the fact that I grew up believing or being taught that if you make eye contact with someone, you should acknowledge their existence.
Mm.
So in a strange way, I do enjoy acknowledging their existence.
Mm-hmm.
And that brief, very straight eye contact is very unique.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. It's one of those very strange responses in many ways, mm-hmm. especially when the eyes dart away. They didn't see me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. It's enjoyable to put on and smile.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And when I'm on the bus, I do notice the diversity in how everybody is in their own little world. Sometimes they're in their phone, but most times they're in their own little world. And how there is, everybody's worried about this, everybody's worried about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I look around and I say, she's a Buddha, he's a Buddha, there's a Buddha, he's a Buddha.
Everywhere a Buddha.
Everywhere a Buddha. Just so I understand, everybody has the Buddha nature, the Buddha potential. And as I understand it, eventually everyone becomes Buddha. So,
yeah. And the Dharmakaya, the body of truth, is that there's one Buddha, period.
And
that's everyone.
And I'm surrounded by Buddhas on the bus.
Yeah.
In a way.
In a way.
That's it.
Well, we could sit here forever, but maybe maybe we won't this time. Maybe another time. Thank you all for coming. Monday we're having a little holiday, so there won't be zazen on Monday, so stay home. Come by Tuesday instead. Oh, also, again, April 1st, Tuesday evening, here at 7 p.m., Venerable Robina Courtine, Tibetan nun, will be giving a talk, and everyone's invited. Yes?
Does that preclude 6 p.m.?
It does. There shall not be 6 p.m. zazen on April 1st. Just remember that. Okay. Instead, we'll have a talk from a Western Tibetan nun who's very interesting to listen to. So, Thank you all very much.